We're good.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Imran, the Don Khan.
How you doing, Blessing?
I'm doing good. Happy New Year, Imran.
Happy New Year. Yeah, this is the first official show we've been on, I guess.
KFGD, because we were on Gamescast this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're on Gamescast. Our best of 2020. You should go listen to that.
And Kind of Funny Day and... we've been doing streams also.
Yeah, we've seen each other a lot this year, even though we're only on the 7th. But this is our first KFG, which is exciting.
Yes.
Oh, no. Is Imran frozen for you too, Kevin?
No.
Is everybody frozen?
You're frozen for me. You're frozen for me. And like,
okay.
There you go. You're good. You unfroze. You unfroze.
Yeah.
Am I moving? Okay. Cool.
You look good.
Thank God.
You look good.
Thank you. Yeah. Imran, we played a lot of Bloodborne over the break. And let me tell you, that was a good time. I don't think we've gotten to talk about just that on content, but... I really enjoyed our Bloodborne streams because one, helped me get through the game, which I appreciate. Two, I feel like it brought us closer together. I feel like we have like this renewed form of friendship that was there before, obviously, but now like we're blood brothers, you know?
Now it's been forged in fire. Like we've been through some shit together.
For sure.
But now we're closer than we were a year ago.
Now, my question for you is, do you want to sit in with me during these Sekiro streams?
I was probably just going to drop in and start talking shit anyway. So yeah, probably.
Because I think that'll be a good time. I'm very excited. What's one thing I should keep in mind for Sekiro now that I'm going to start it again?
You're going to be bad. Like, that's just... Sekiro doesn't work the same way Bloodborne does. It works on the same fundamental principles, but like, it's just different enough that if you try to play it like Bloodborne, you're going to fail. So just accept that death is one of those things that's going to happen. And like... and by the time if you ever go back to the beginning of Sekiro after finishing it, you'll be like, I don't understand how these enemies were killing me before. They seem so easy now.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Very excited. Of course, that's happening right after Kind of Funny Games Daily on twitch.tv/Kind of Funny Games. But for right now, we're on Kind of Funny Games Daily. So let's talk about new Switch Pro leaks, Microsoft Nintendo alternate timeline, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/Kind of Funny Games. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Blackjack. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN, Honey, and PillPack, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. Starting with our number one. That was very good, Kevin. You get an imaginary gold star for that.
Yeah! First of the year! Woo!
Starting with our number one, let's talk about some new details about that Switch Pro, which have leaked. This is from Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Reference to an upgraded Nintendo Switch model has reportedly been found within the console's latest firmware update, seemingly strengthening reports that a Pro console will be released this year. The details come via known data miner Skyers M, who claims that the firmware makes reference to a new hardware model codenamed Ala. Ala reportedly uses the same chip used in the Nintendo Switch Lite and 2019 revision. While this by itself doesn't suggest improved performance, Skyers M suggests it will be pushed to higher clock speeds, and that the firmware also references support for a Realtek chip, which advertises itself as a 4K UHD multimedia SoC. Previous reports have indicated that Switch Pro will support 4K resolution. As for the physical hardware, it's claimed that the Ala model has an upgraded display in the form of an OLED screen, an OLED screen. In addition, the firmware supposedly suggests substantially better cooling and battery life for Ala. Multiple outlets have reported that Nintendo is preparing to launch new Switch hardware in early 2021, and that it might feature upgraded computing power and support for 4K graphics. According to one September Bloomberg story, Nintendo has reportedly asked game developers to make their existing games 4K ready in preparation for the new hardware. Asked about Switch Pro, as it's been nicknamed, during a Polygon interview published last month, Nintendo of America president Doug Bowser played down reports that the company is planning an imminent Switch revamp. Quote, right now, with the momentum that we have, Our focus will be on existing form factors, end quote, he said. And I remember that interview, me and Greg talked about it on KFGD, and that was kind of the thing that for me led me to think that, okay, maybe this thing is further out than we think. But with these reports in mind, or with these reports factored in, with the data mining factored in, Imran, where do you sit at with where the Switch Pro is?
So I, for one, I don't believe Doug Bowser, because one, I don't think necessarily,
because his last name is Bowser,
knows,
he's a villain.
Yeah, he's a villain. He's still good. He is sitting up at 8-4 being like, where's all these people coming from my bridge? Clearly, like, he's spending his time
princess.
Like,
where you yeah, at?
Where? Why are they taking so long? But like, Nintendo has, before the DS Lite was announced, literally the day before, they denied a rumor that the DS Lite was going to be announced. Like, they have a track record of saying, oh, yeah, this isn't a thing, and then later it's a thing. That said, I read over this stuff last night. I don't believe... I do think they did actually look at the data they're saying they're looking at, because Skyers M is someone who is very well known for finding, like, Switch firmware stuff and, like, Switch... That's the word I'm looking for. Like, bringing home this Switch very well over the last couple of years. So I think he or she, or, you know, they did this. But I think they're also making some leaps I'm not sure I would make. Like, I don't think necessarily that it's going to have an OLED screen. I think compatibility for powering that doesn't necessarily... Like, that is such a waste, especially for a 4K OLED screen. I don't think that's ever happening.
On a handheld? I think a
home or a docked thing where it like uses maybe DLSS or some mobile equivalent to DLSS, that is like, I think that's a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. I think the thing that has made this whole run up to a potential Switch Pro interesting is that, like, you know, we talk about, like, Doug Bowser, is he telling the truth, do we believe what he's saying, all that stuff. I think the nugget that I take from that interview is where he talks about Switch software and how the Switch is still doing well. Because, like, if you look at sales, I think we talked about this a bit actually yesterday with me and Gary, like, the Switch is killing it. The Switch, in terms of attachment rate, the attachment rate for software on the Switch is incredible, especially when you look at first party software. And with that being the case, like, there's not really a big reason why you need to release the Switch Pro in the spring. That coupled with COVID, that coupled with just like the woes of software development and all that stuff, right? Like, if you are, as reports have said over the last year, right, like, if you are preparing this library launch with the Switch Pro, right, whether that be Breath of the Wild 2 or whatever other software you're going to have ready at that time to launch with it, if that's not ready to go by spring, I think you'd easily delay till fall, or delay till spring 2022 and be fine and roll out that way.
I mean, honestly, that's kind of what I expect. Is if the Switch Pro is real, which no one's here saying for sure that it is, but if it is real, I would probably expect it towards the end of 2021 or beginning of 2022. Like, this is not a thing that's going to come out tomorrow. And I imagine, like, software is part of the reason, like, they would push it back. Like, we've not seen hide nor hair of Breath of the Wild 2, and it seems like it would actually be a good fit for, like, a more powerful console, or, you know, a PS4 Pro style upgrade. Like, if it is a thing where they are using, like, DLSS technology, or, as I said, some variant of that, like, that would be cool that they could get, like, better frame rates and better resolution on older games and newer games, like, theoretically, from just, like, raw horsepower. So I'm curious to see, like, if they do a Switch Pro, which I think they will do at some point, how that, like, affects the split between new games and old games. Like, is a Breath of the Wild 2 going to be like, yeah, it is ostensibly like up-res to 4K on Switch Pro, but, like, 720 to 1080 on regular Switch? And is that going, like, will that get people to go, like, oh, shit, that will get me to go, oh, shit, I need a new Switch. I don't know about regular people. I think maybe most people might just be fine with, like, Animal Crossing still looks fine. Who cares?
Yeah, as long as it works, and I'm down to use my Switch that I already own.
Yeah.
Do you think it is going to be handheld? Because I know that I forget if it's you or if it was somebody else who we had the back and forth of, like, yeah, no, it could be a console. Like, it could be just a home console that works as, like, the secondary thing, right? Like, you go home, have this thing that's already plugged into your TV, and that is the way in which it supports 4K, is like knowing that it doesn't have to like support like this handheld screen or having an OLED or anything else, right? Like, do you think they're for sure? Where do you sit at with that?
I think if I were Nintendo and I was looking at this from an economical perspective, what I would do is have a new Switch that, as a Switch Pro, as a handheld, it is basically like that story says, functionally similar to the Switch and the Switch Lite. Because like that doesn't drain battery, that doesn't do too much heat. Like, it is playing the quote unquote worst versions of games in a handheld version. But when you plug it into a dock, maybe the new Switch has a better throughput that like allows it to actually gain more from the dock than the original Switch did. So like when docked, it is like 4K capable, or you know, can play games at better frame rate. Like, we already kind of see that in Switch now, but like to a larger extent, not just because it's kicking on fans. Like, I think that would be the smarter way to do it. And like that would make it so, oh, you can't just buy a new dock, you have to buy a new Switch, because you know, it just wouldn't be possible with the old one. Like, I think that is probably smarter. We'll see how they end up doing it. I could foresee a situation where they just, you know, they release a non-hybrid version, because they've already gone that way with the Switch Lite. Like, what if they just went full? Like, there are people who just have no interest in a handheld, and they maybe want just a better graphic Switch, and that would be, you know, this would be for them. But yeah, they are killing it in sales, but at some point, like, technology is going to outpace them, and getting ports, which they kind of rarely do now, but they still do enough that they still highlight them, like, that could become a problem. Like, I'm not saying Bugsnax would be too hard for Switch, but I'm not seeing it on Switch yet, so like, maybe that is a case of where even indie developers are going, hey, we need a little bit more overhead to work with this thing, or like something. So that may be Nintendo's thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we reach further and further into the Xbox Series X and PS5 generation, and you see games being made exclusively for those consoles, it becomes less and less enticing to want to go back and make something. And go back feels mean to say, but you know what I mean. Like, right, scale down for the Switch when you made something for these advanced consoles that feel that were easier to develop because of the power there, right? And like, scaling down is going to take work. Maybe a Switch Pro fixes that, or maybe the solution is Nintendo's just like, fuck it, like, you guys are still buying our console because we have first party stuff, and that's the reason why you're here, and so we don't have to worry about that stuff. I mean, I think either of those are possibilities.
I think Nintendo would love an iPad model of where like they release a new thing every couple of years, or every like, let's say 4 years, and that's like, it slowly becomes the new Switch, and then a new one comes out and stuff like that. Because if you think about Nintendo's history, they have had amazing successes that get absolutely just wrecked by generational transitions, because like the new thing isn't as good for some reason, or they couldn't communicate that it's a new thing, or third parties like the old thing but they don't like the new thing. And like, if the Switch is hot, Switch is selling super well, so if they just, you know, don't do a generational transition but still keep up on technology,
just ride this wave.
Like, maybe that's where console gaming is going in general. And like, they're just going to be the first ones to actually outright say, yeah, we're doing this.
Well, speaking of Nintendo, story number two, Microsoft once tried to buy Nintendo. This is from Megan Frokmanesh at The Verge. Today, Xbox is a powerhouse, yet it wasn't always so. Bloomberg's Dina Bass published an oral history on the creation of Microsoft's Xbox that recounts the console's conception from an executive retreat through release day, with snags like a failed bit at Nintendo detailed along the way. The original Xbox was known as Midway, or Coffin Box to some, according to the Xbox technology officer Seamus Blackley, quote, because they worried that it would fail and end their career at Microsoft, end quote. As part of an effort to lock in exclusive games, Microsoft tried to acquire companies like Electronic Arts, Midway Games, and Square. Kevin Baucus, director of third-party relations, says that the president and later Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer also made the team meet with Nintendo. Their pitch revolved around the technical powers of the Xbox. It did not go as planned. Quote, they just laughed their asses off, Baucus told Bloomberg. Like, imagine an hour of somebody just laughing at you. That was kind of how the meeting went,
Jesus.
End quote. Right? Bloomberg's story goes on to explore the console's actual achievements, including its successful bid for Halo creator Bungie. The full piece is well worth the read, especially for the anecdote about an unnamed Konami executive. As for Nintendo, Chairman of Nintendo America, Howard Lincoln, told the publication that the company, quote, does not talk about confidential discussions with other companies. In any event, nothing came of these discussions, end quote.
Yeah, nobody Imran. Cried either.
Dude, I would, my feelings would have been so hurt if I was Xbox and like I walk in with a serious deal and Miyamoto just starts giggling, everybody starts cracking up, and I'm like, no, wait, but this we got this console called the Xbox, it's gonna do great, and Miyamoto's just there like, and we got the GameCube, like what do we need you guys for?
There's a story about how Shinji Mikami was famously very pissed at Sony for some reason, I don't remember. I think it was about 2D games, but like he was shopping Resident Evil out to other companies after the PlayStation like launch or the end of the PlayStation generation. So he obviously in Resident Evil ended up going to GameCube for a little bit after that, but he took a meeting with Microsoft first. And I think like they were late and they came into the room like rushed and like all that stuff, and they didn't like properly greet them. And Mikami found this incredibly offensive. And that was when he said, okay, yeah, Resident Evil's not coming to Xbox. Like, not mainline series, you know, new stuff. So I would not be shocked if Microsoft kind of walked into these sort of things being like, I don't know, we're fucking Microsoft. We're like, yeah, we don't gotta
we
be
got money.
You know,
we're the most powerful corporation in the world.
And then like every Japanese company is like, fuck off. Like, yeah. there's a dance to this. Don't think you're above that.
Yeah. Now this whole story I think is fascinating and hilarious. The Nanobiologists, I like their question. They wrote in and said, hey, Bless. They said Bless and Tim because I think today was supposed to be Tim, but yeah. Changing it, removing Tim's name, adding Imran's name. Hey, Bless and Imran. An interesting piece of news came out yesterday.
Just remove the T.
Oh, yeah, I could just remove the T. Hey, Bless and Imran. An interesting piece of news came out yesterday that I thought was humorous. Microsoft tried to buy Nintendo. This happened just around the time that the original Xbox released, too. Naturally, this is crazy. Except, is it now when Microsoft bought Bethesda? So, what do you think a world of Microsoft Nintendo would have looked like? Would Nintendo have been the same? Could it have gotten hit bad during the Don Matrick era? Or could Xbox and Nintendo have completely different beasts that we couldn't even imagine? Thanks, the Nanobiologist. Imran, I want you to theorize with me. What does a Microsoft Nintendo look like?
This is what we call in politics when we talk about theoretical things is the minor scale. That we can think, we have an excellent example of what a Nintendo-like company under Microsoft would have been like, because they did buy Rare, and Rare did define a lot of Nintendo's N64 generation, and like a lot of their I think Nintendo was really reactive to what Rare was putting out. So in that sense, they really didn't do well with Rare for a number of years. Like Viva Pinata is a great game, but they didn't know what to do with it. Like it didn't seem to really jive with their audience. So I think it would have been like a number of years of Nintendo being very much lost in the woods, because back in the day, Microsoft was very hands-on, or they were hands-on about how hands-off they were with their studios. So they would tell them to do things and just kind of leave them to do it. And that led to a lot of like misdirection and people like studios not understanding what they wanted, what the audience wanted. They weren't being reactive to like what, like if I had Rare early in the Xbox generation, I wouldn't have put out Conquer and Grab by the Ghoulies and stuff like that. It would have been, hey, make something like GoldenEye. Instead, they made a very bad Perfect Dark game that should have been like more quality controlled than it was. Like, I think you would have like, oh yeah, here's a new Mario. Like, here's Mario 64 2 or whatever, which maybe that would have been better than Sunshine. But like, I don't think you'd ever get to the Mario Galaxy part of that like line. You wouldn't have Nintendo learning the lessons they learned from the GameCube generation, and you wouldn't have the Wii era. Essentially, you would have like Nintendo's IPs, for better or worse, kind of languishing in a more technologically advanced but more probably creatively inhibited place than they were.
Yeah, because if you look at Microsoft from, I guess, the original Xbox era compared to Microsoft now, I think Microsoft has learned a lot of lessons, and like a lot of big companies or big publishers have learned a lot of lessons in terms of their relationships with their studios and how much of a hand they should have in those projects. And so you look at a lot of the studios that Microsoft has acquired, and like a lot of this is in theory because we haven't seen a lot of the fruits of that, but from what we understand from interviews and how they talk about their studios, like those studios are relatively free to like work on the projects that they want to and have the creative freedom that they want to, right? Like Double Fine, I assume is still going to be Double Fine. They're still working on the next Psychonauts. That seems like it's still going to be true to what it is. And beyond that, it seems like they're still going to keep working on what they want to. Like same with Obsidian, right? Where Obsidian put out Outer Worlds, and the next Obsidian game that we've gotten announced is Avowed, I think, the fantasy game.
Yes, the Skyrim like.
The Skyrim looking game. And that looks aligned with how Obsidian is as a studio, right? That looks like an Obsidian game. And I expect that to continue with all the other studios that Microsoft owns. If this happened in 2001 or whenever these discussions were going on, yeah, I think you would have seen a grand shift in the type of games that Nintendo would have made. Like, I don't think you would have seen Nintendo continue to put out, even though, like, the GameCube era, I feel like, was a weird era for Nintendo games. But either way, right, I don't think you would have gotten to Mario Galaxy. You wouldn't have gotten to Breath of the Wild. You wouldn't have gotten to certain games because they would have changed. Like, they would have changed fundamentally. And maybe in the way the universe works, that would have circled back around to, now we have Rare putting out Sea of Thieves, and they're going to put out the next game that they have announced. I forget the name of it already. The Wild, Everwild game. Everwild. Yes. They're going to put out Everwild, and like, that looks cool. And I think that has the potential to be really awesome and get a lot of people on board. But that's never a sure thing, right? Like, I don't know what that circle around looks like for Nintendo. Maybe that looks like Mario Strikers 2. Who knows?
And like, the other side of this, separate from the quality of the games, is if Microsoft bought their way into the industry by buying Nintendo, holy shit, I cannot imagine how bad like the anger against Microsoft would have been. Like, it was already like pretty bad that like at that time was people like, it was the people putting dollar signs at Microsoft and be like, I can't believe this like American company is like muscling its way into the industry. And like the Xbox did kind of, in a lot of ways, kind of bore that out of like, here's this giant like old VCR looking system with this incredibly big controller that like is putting out just, you know, first person shooters, which were that at that point not a industry defining genre, or, you know, putting out like Brute Force or games like Dead or Alive and Kakuto Tojin, and games that like weren't necessarily looked at as, you know, good games, and they were like weird things to define a brand by. But if you went like, oh, these motherfuckers also bought Nintendo, you have, let's say, like 30 million Nintendo fans that are going to dedicate everything they have to being upset about this. And I don't know if you then have a Microsoft that like is able to actually latch on to the teenage to adult like market that actually gave them the boost in the Xbox era and the 360 and all that stuff, and Sony just captures that. Like, maybe Microsoft gets the family genre or family audience there and doesn't need the teenage one, but instead of like getting it, they just lose it all to Sony, because the PS2 was that console for so long. So yeah, it's an interesting thought experiment of what would have happened. And I don't think it would have worked out well for anyone, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I think where we're at with the three companies, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, now is a better place than where we would have been at had Microsoft acquired Nintendo.
Yeah, this generation, they're all doing something different. Like, generation before, like, Microsoft and Sony were a little too close, and that like worked out to Sony's favor and didn't work out to Microsoft's. But this one, it's like, okay, you get a different it's a lot of the same games, but you are getting a different experience on all three consoles.
Speaking of Microsoft-owned studios, story number three is Microsoft's In Exile working on an FPS RPG. This is Jordan Alleman at IGN. Wasteland 3 developer In Exile Entertainment appears to be working on an FPS RPG according to new job listings. Spotted by Twisted Voxel, the studio's open positions, such as lead gameplay engineer, mention that applicants will be working on In Exile's, quote, next-generation action role-playing game, implementing new first-person shooter gameplay features, end quote. The senior gameplay designer position talks about the creation of powerful, quote, powerful, tactile, first-person weapons and unique combat abilities that draw the player right into the middle of the action, end quote, but confirming that In Exile's project will be a first-person shooter RPG similar to the likes of Cyberpunk 2077 or Deus Ex. Back in May 2020, In Exile CEO Brian Fargo mentioned that the next studio's next-gen RPG or that the studio's next-gen RPG will harness the power of Unreal Engine 5 during development. Later that year in September, Fargo added that the studio is working on two RPGs right now, with the second, quote, in the infancy of pre-production, end quote.
And so Ron, before we go on to that blessing, I want to ask Barrett real quick, please ban yourself from chat.
I saw that. I've been seeing Barrett in chat saying some very inflammatory.
Yeah. Come on, Barrett. The only great 3D Mario is Odyssey. Come on.
Wait, say that again?
the only great 3D Mario is Mario Odyssey.
Oh yeah, that's a terrible. Okay, I thought you said the best. Crazy. I can understand best.
I can understand best. Best, I don't. Best, I would argue, but I don't think he's wrong.
You guys, you can't give these kids attention. You know.
Barrett. I'm just saying, I'm asking Barrett, do your job and ban yourself from chat.
Ban yourself from chat, please, Barrett. Thank you. I didn't want to bring attention to it, but I'm glad you did, Imran, because this was disturbing me.
Yeah.
The only great 3D Mario's Odyssey.
Back to In Exile.
God damn.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if they were working on a first person RPG immersive sim kind of game. I do worry. And granted, there's not a lot to base this off of, but with a Bethesda acquisition and with Obsidian working on, as we said, a Skyrim-style game, are you getting to the point where you have too many of the same kind of, to take it to Nintendo, they have too many 2D platformers. I think even they realized that, and they kind of backed off that for a little while.
No such thing as too many 2D platformers, first of all.
I think from a market perspective, people are like, why do I need a Tropical Freeze when New Super Mario Brothers just came out, that kind of thing. So I can see a situation where okay, there's Avow, there's Skyrim, there's Starfield, there's whatever, maybe Arcane makes a new immersive sim, and now this In Exile has one out too. Are these games different enough for the consumer to look at all them and be no, I know the difference. This one's an RPG, this one's more of an action game. Or are they just gonna be yo, the Xbox Game Pass library has a lot of first-person action, first-person RPG sims, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this feels like Microsoft kind of leaning into the idea of, hey, let's own something, right? Let's own a genre. Because I think historically we've always associated Xbox with first-person shooters. And this does feel like them, and also Western RPGs a bit, right? This feels like them really leaning into that of, hey, yeah, let's continue with the Halos. Let's continue with that. Let's continue with the games that people love. And then, yeah, let's build this catalog that continues to celebrate and take ownership of that. And that feels like very much the move, especially when you buy Bethesda and that's that catalog, right? Bethesda's catalog of studios are making first-person shooters and RPGs and first-person RPGs. That said, I wouldn't be surprised if In Exile is working on a Fallout. I think that would be exciting. I think that would line up. Because, you know, one, they're the Wasteland studio, and Wasteland obviously has lineage and Fallout and stuff. But then also, when you look at what is being worked on right now, Bethesda Game Studios, they have announced Starfield, they have announced Elder Scrolls 6, which means that the next Fallout from them is a long way down.
Like
years, late and 20, years, and years down.
Late this decade, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. If that, if Starfield comes out, let's say in 2 years, and then Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, what, 5, 6, 7 years after that, then yeah.
I would say 2025 to 2026 for Elder. Theoretically, they're already making it, but they can't be making it that hard if they're also working on Starfield. You know, that's not that big a studio.
Exactly. But yeah, but that pushes Fallout way out. And with Fallout 76 not necessarily being as successful as Bethesda has wanted it to be, I think that puts Fallout in this weird place of, okay, we cannot let this IP just fizzle and sit, and you know, we have to make a return on this somehow, or we have to keep it active. And I think either giving it to Obsidian to make another New Vegas, or giving it to In Exile to make whatever In Exile wants to make, even if that is another New Vegas or whatever it is, another spinoff, I think that is 1000% a move that they're thinking about, and I'm sure both Obsidian and In Exile would probably be excited about.
Right. I would really love a new game that takes inspiration from Deus Ex, especially Square Enix is not going to give me a Deus Ex. What do we call these? We call them shit shooters, because you shoot the shit and you shoot shit. I think we need more of those games, and I would, if In Exile is going to make one, I'd be happy for it. I just kind of worry, at what point do you go, okay, this is too many for our publishing label. Maybe we need to, it does diversify, as much as I didn't really dig Wasteland 3, it does diversify Game Pass if you're looking down it and go, okay, I'm looking for a new game to play. None of these, first-person RPGs are really, what I want right now. But this one, this, isometric or tactical or whatever RPG, does look more interesting for what I'm into. But, you know, also, there is the argument that if you're going to work for Microsoft, if you're going to be bought by Microsoft, fucking make a couple of AAA games. Go spend that money that they're spending on everything else. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Barrett in chat, just said none of them 3D games are as good as New Super Mario Brothers U. Again, Barrett, time yourself out, please. Please, for the love of God, please time yourself out.
He's gotten mad with power.
Yeah, he's gotten very mad with power. He's like deep in there too. It's one of those ones where like where you dig yourself in a little bit with like, you know, a controversial opinion. And then like once you start to feel that pushback, you like dig your heels in. Barret's like a Diglett right now, right? Like the Pokemon. He just used dig. He's all the way underground. He's not letting up. He's in there. He's throwing hooks.
The end. Oh, Barret's here. Oh, Barret, God, he's come here. On, Barret.
Barret, what are you doing in there?
Barret,
we can't hear you, Barret. You're muted, I think.
Yeah.
Still muted.
Yeah. I can't hear
you. Okay. There he is.
Y'all are gonna tell me that you think the 3D games overall are better than the 2D games overall? Get the fuck
overall,
out of here.
Overall is a different conversation, but yes, I would say that.
I would say with the exception of Sunshine, most 3D games are better than New Super Mario Bros. Wii, DS, and 2. U is a harder argument. U I will put closer to like...
Come on, man.
Sunshine's great. Fucking bad. Sunshine's a bad game.
I don't like Sunshine.
And I don't like the sudden sunshine love in the chat. Like there's a bunch of Sunshine defenders in there.
Here's the thing, you don't
y'all
realize
need
Sunshine.
To get the fuck out of here.
Sunshine's controls suck ass. Like I've been
they're
playing that
so
game
bad.
Recently.
They're
is
bad.
It like when you run onto things, that A button does not respond nearly as fast as you think it was.
You're gonna tell me any of these 3D games are better than Super Mario World, blessing.
Okay, no, World is a different like
I'll hear the argument that overall the 2D games are better than the 3D games. I disagree, but I understand where that comes from because World
exactly.
and 3 are masterpieces. But
I might
like,
put Galaxy equivalent to World.
Galaxy and Galaxy 2 are good games.
They were at the time revelatory
games.
Revolutionary?
Revelatory. They are great games that like I think define a lot of that like not even just genre, but like actual the 3D versus 2D, you know.
Yeah, and schism. Mario 64 is revelatory and revolutionary.
And it aged like shit.
And no, it didn't I played that thing
Barrett,
this last
how are you
year.
Drunk
that thing
at 10:30?
Amazing.
How?
Yeah, we're
Kevin.
10:30.
When was
Barrett?
The last time you played Mario 64?
Like 2 weeks ago.
No, I mean, it was longer than
no,
that.
No, I'm asking
like,
Kevin, who's like,
me
who's trying to defend
with
the...
it. There we go. There we go. Got rid of that problem.
Thank
you know what I mean, guys?
Oh God, he's back!
I
oh,
don't
no.
fucking appreciate you doing that, Kevin. I'll kick you out of this call. I can do it too.
He's recording
the show.
Barrett,
don't
we're
make
talk
me
about
ban you.
This.
You
he did
this
to us yesterday.
Barrett, we're gonna continue this conversation in the post show because I got more. I got words.
No, I got shit to do. You know,
this is the 2021 chaotic energy that I feel like we really need right now.
You're just starting.
Barrett, you're recording the
White House
show.
Got stormed yesterday. I can't deal with this shit today. Story number 4. Twitch removes the popular PogChamp emote. This is from Patricia Hernandez at gamesindustry.biz. PogChamp, one of gaming culture's most prominent faces, has been removed from the live streaming service Twitch, the company has announced. The decision was taken in light of its real-world face, fighting game personality Ryan Gutex Gutierrez, who utilized social media in Twitch's words to encourage, quote, further violence after what took place in the Capitol today, end quote. Following a violent takeover of Capitol Hill by Trump supporters and calls to impeach from major political figures, Gutierrez asked his followers to continue the civil unrest that unfolded throughout January 6th. The personality invoked the name of a woman who died during the Trump supporter takeover, encouraging his followers to watch a video about her passing. In short, many top gaming personalities announced that they were either banning the wide-eyed emote from their channels, if not asking the platform itself, Twitch, to take action against it. The charge was led by content creator Natasha Zombie Kills Zynda, a personality who has been vocal about deplatforming hate. Gutierrez previously made the news over spreading conspiracy theories. Twitch's own community guidelines prohibit violence, including using platforms outside of the live streaming service to encourage it. Imran, I don't know, you're probably following this as it was happening yesterday because it was all over Twitter. It was impossible not to follow. I think this is a good move by Twitch. Like, I think this makes sense. What are your thoughts on it?
Apparently I had not been following Gutex for a while because like there hasn't been that many fighting game tournaments recently, but he has apparently just become like a massive piece of shit. Like he's been like a COVID denier, which is one of the dumbest things you can possibly be right now. And I say one of because there actually do appear to be dumber things you can be. But like I don't think I ever tied before this year, I don't think I ever tied PogChamp to him. I don't think I ever recognized that was him. So like, he's apparently always hated the emoticon, so that I could see an argument to not removing it because he sucks. But like, also he sucks, so I don't want to think about him. Like, mm-hmm. just like, it's cool that Twitch is like, okay, yeah, this guy just he has gone a step too far now. Let's just remove him. I had to go through a community Discord last night and make sure that we did not have a PogChamp one. But like, I don't think they should replace him with any one person. I saw this theory online of, not theory, but like suggestion of just type in like Pog and it should come from a database of just like tons of streamers. It should have like Khalif and Paris and Zombie and all of those people. It just like have like a excited reaction from them. And that I think represents Twitch better than like any one person going like, oh, like this should be like, it should be a celebration of all streamers and not just one.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. I think that'll be a powerful way to do it. There was a question that somebody wrote in, and I don't have time to like read through the whole question, but they're essentially asking the question of, you know, is Twitch removing the emote performative? Like, is this the thing that's necessary? And I think the power behind Twitch removing the emote is PogChamp as a term doesn't need to be associated with that face. And if that's a face that causes people discomfort, or is a face that is associated with somebody who is behaving shitty, shittily. I'm gonna use it. Who's behaving shittily, right? Or encouraging violence and doing all this stuff, right? That you shouldn't be doing. Then separate those things, you know. Because I think the more you, if Twitch was to leave it and was to just roll with it and act like it wasn't happening, then I think you start to paint your platform in a certain color in terms of being like, okay, yeah, like we don't care about these things, or we don't care enough to like make actions to better the platform. But then also you then leave that term as a thing that's being associated with that image, and I think that then colors the term badly for everybody in a way where, for Twitch, taking it back and redefining it reassociating it with a different image, or reassociating it with something that's more positive or something that is liked more, I think is going to go further into making it so that, hey, yeah, we can all still use the term PogChamp, we can all still say poggers and all that stuff, and it doesn't get associated with hate, you know, because of this one dude.
Also, it may be performative, but like, guess what? So is a lot of things. And like, you need to have the people who are only doing good because they're ashamed of doing it to get the cultural change that you actually kind of need to get people to actually believe, like, hey, this is a good thing. Like, I understand, like, it's not part of a like argument between shitty people. It is just like, oh, I understand that this change is good because I like, people have been saying it is good. So like, yeah, that's a cynical way of looking at it, but also, yeah, sometimes you do need like pressure from people who are, I hate to use this term, but virtue signaling a little bit, to make sure those virtues are ingrained in our culture as, you know, better.
For sure. Before we get into story number 5, I want to tell you about our sponsor, of course. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by ExpressVPN. How did you choose which internet service provider to use? The sad thing is, most of us have very little choice, because ISPs operate like monopolies in the region that they serve. They then use this monopoly power to take advantage of customers, data caps, streaming throttles, the list goes on. But worst of all, many ISPs log your internet activity and sell that data on to other big tech companies or advertisers. To prevent ISPs from seeing our internet activity, Kind of Funny protects its devices with ExpressVPN. So what is ExpressVPN? It's a simple app for your computer or smartphone that encrypts all your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so that your ISP cannot see any of your activity. Just think about how much your life is on the internet. Sadly, every site you visit, video you watch, or a message you send gets tracked by ISPs or other tech giants who can then sell your information for profit. That's the reason I recommend ExpressVPN as the best way to hide your online activity from your ISP. Just download the app, tap one button on your device, and you're protected. And ExpressVPN does all of this without slowing your connection. That's why it's rated the number one VPN service by CNET and Wired. So stop handing over your personal data to ISPs and other tech giants who mine your activity and sell off your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me private online. Visit expressvpn.com/games. That's expressvpn.com/games to get 3 extra months free. Go to expressvpn.com/games right now to learn more. We're also brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where today's sponsor, Honey, comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically tests them when you're checking out. Here's how it works. You get Honey on your computer for free in two easy clicks. Then, when you're checking out on one of its over 30,000 supported sites, Honey pops up and all you have to do is click Apply Coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons for that site. If Honey finds working codes, it'll apply the best one to your cart. Greg loves this thing and uses it all the time. He saves money on random sites and then turns his Honey credit into Amazon gift cards. Honey has found its over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. Honey supports all kinds of retailers, from tech giants and gaming sites to fashion brands to even food delivery. It's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. It's free and works with whatever browser you use. You can get Honey for free today at joinhoney.com/games. That's joinhoney.com/games so they know that we sent you. Thanks, Honey, for supporting today's episode. Lastly, we're brought to you by Amazon Pharmacy. Chances are you use Amazon, but have you used Amazon Pharmacy yet? That's right. Prescriptions delivered to your door by Amazon, just like the toilet paper and Funko Pops you're probably already ordering. It saves you time and keeps you out of the waiting line at the pharmacy. It's easy. Have your doctor's office send your next prescription straight to Amazon Pharmacy. You can use insurance. Amazon Pharmacy works with most insurance plans worldwide, nationwide. Amazon Prime members get free two-day delivery and save on prescription medication when paying without insurance. Tim needed some medication over the break. He used Amazon Pharmacy, and he says it's easy as all hell. And let me tell you, back in, oh God, it was October, wasn't it? Yeah, back in October, I was getting my wisdom teeth removed. You all know this very well. Let me tell you, the worst thing that I had to do during all that was stand in line at a pharmacy. While I was in pain, it'd be nice if I could just get somebody to deliver it for me. That's what Amazon Pharmacy does. They help you out with that, deliver it right to your door. It's great. Amazon Prime members can save on prescription medication when not using insurance and get free two-day delivery. Learn more at amazon.com/gamesrx. That's amazon.com/gamesrx. amazon.com/gamesrx. Imran.
What's up?
Story number five. A canceled 2006 Tomb Raider game is now playable. This is Zach Zweisen at Kotaku. And Kevin, I have gameplay footage in the doc if you want to pull that up for people to see as they read through. Back in 2006, Core Design, the original studio behind the Tomb Raider series, was working on a 10th anniversary remake of the first game for PSP. While a lot of progress was made, the game was eventually canceled. Now, that original PSP game has resurfaced and is playable, PC Gamer reports. On December 31st, Tomb Raider fan site Tomb of Ash uploaded what it says are the PSP remake assets to the Internet Archive. The assets include multiple levels, complete with puzzles and platforms. If you follow Tomb of Ash's instructions, you'll be able to play the unreleased 2006 PSP Tomb Raider remake. And it looks cool. Like, I was surprised by how finished it seems by looking at the gameplay footage.
So they released a Tomb Raider anniversary game. Is this just a PSP version of that?
What year did that come out? If it was 2006, then probably. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, there probably was. Yeah, it was probably the handheld version.
Okay, so it's neat that they did that, but like, we have a PS2 360 and I think PS3 version of that game.
Yeah. Like, so there are better ways to play it, obviously.
Yes.
But like, it's cool for at least like archaeology. What's the word I'm looking for? Preservation. It's good for preservation. Yes. It's good for
absolutely. That is absolutely true. Yes. It just like I saw the headline and I haven't seen the footage until now. And I was picturing like, oh, there must have been like pre-reboot another try and go again with the old Lara and all that stuff. And I was like really interested in that. And like, this is still cool. That to be like, but it's not exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. I feel that. One more news story. Story number six. Hitman VR looks ridiculous. This is another one that I have the trailer for, Kevin, if you can pull it up. I'm very excited for Hitman 3. This morning, IO Interactive released the trailer for the VR mode for Hitman 3. And I'm very into it. It's basically the cool things about it, obviously, is that like with Hitman 3, you get the retroactive Hitman levels. And so the Hitman 1 and Hitman 2 levels are available, and they are also available in VR. And so you can just walk around in these levels. And like it looks like its own. Like if you just showed me this, I don't think I would have known immediately that was Hitman. So different.
Like just looking at this footage, I'd have been like, oh, it's Cyberpunk.
Yeah, like it kind of feels that way. But it's like more of a sandbox, like, hey, just go in and fuck around and get your assassination. And I'm definitely going to try this.
There's no way this works like this smoothly, right? Like this is going to suck, right? Like, because this looks VR, fucking incredible.
VR footage is always like a smoke and mirrors show, but like hopefully it works as well. Like I saw Simon Cardi post a thing today of like tapping someone on the shoulder and then punching them.
Yeah. Which if that works, that's great. Because like, that's the thing. That's the thing that I want more of in VR is just ways to fuck around. And Hitman is the perfect fuck around game. And so like if I'm able to just walk around and like, yeah, tap people on their shoulder and then fuck with them. And it's going to come up in a second in this trailer, but like that seems like a very fun way to play the game. And I'm all about it. I cannot wait for it. I finally got my PSVR adapter. I say finally, I got it like months ago, but I've not put it to use. And so this is going to be the thing that finally gets me to hook it up. And yeah, I think this is the clip of, tapping on the shoulder, turns around, punch him in the face. Fun times.
So this is only for PSVR, right? They're not doing this for the PC version of Hitman?
I don't think so. Maybe they are, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. They've been advertising it and marketing it mainly on PSVR.
So like, that's the weird thing about, so like No Man's Sky is a good example of this because there is a PS5 version of No Man's Sky, I think. So to play VR on No Man's Sky, you need to have the PS4 version on the PS4 on a PS5.
Oh yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's the way Hitman is going to work, of there's a PS5 version of Hitman, but you need to download the PS4 version if you want to play it on VR.
Yeah, I wonder.
And if that's the case, that is very convoluted and I don't like that.
Yeah, no, I didn't really even think about that. Yeah, you would have to get the PS4. You would have to have the PS4 version in order to use the VR.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Which, interesting.
Like, if it's on PC, then sure, I will just, I'm sure it'll be on Epic Game Store and I'll just plug in the Oculus and, like, do it that way. But, like, the PS4 stuff is a little more complicated. And I wonder if it's, like, if you convert it to a PS5 version, can you ever convert it back? Can you, like, switch around? Mm-hmm. Can you download both at the same time? So you can, and if so, do they share a save file?
That's like the thing that I'm not a big fan of when it comes to this particular generational switch, because I've had similar bullshit with like Call of Duty and Warzone, where one, it took me forever to figure out like, okay, can I download Warzone onto my external hard drive? Can I not? Because like that, I was having bullshit with that for some reason. And then if you go into Black Ops Cold War on PS5, there is like an option to boot up Warzone in the game that makes it look like another mode, but that is opening up another executable that is a PS4 game. And like, that's the type of shit that I wish was more smooth, because it does kind of feed back into the idea of, hey, we're PlayStation, we believe in generations and all this stuff. And I'm sure this is a problem on Xbox too.
Xbox has a different problem of when you download a game, it says like, hey, we have an updated version of this, and you have no choice but to accept it, which is like, generally fine. But like, if you don't have the hard drive space for the 4K assets for Gears of War 5, and you just wanted to play Gears of War, like that does become an issue there.
Yeah, and that's been another issue with me for Call of Duty is like I want to have Black Ops Cold War and Warzone, but that's like a lot of gigabytes of space right there on my PS. That's like a percentage of my gigabyte space on my PS5.
Like
pretty
already.
Much. Yeah. I mean, same here. Like I'm out of space because of that, and so I was like, okay, I'm gonna make the hard decision to delete Miles Morales off my PS5. It's time.
I mean, you do hate the game, so that does make sense. That would be the priority sacrifice.
I like that game a lot. It's a great game. Great game, Miles Morales.
I don't even know how this joke started. Greg just started.
I don't know where it started either. I think it started because of
you talked. I was having like about the game. Remember? You're like, oh, yeah, that's true.
No, Kevin got it right. Yeah.
That I don't like.
And Ron, I'm very excited to see what Hitman 3 ends up being. But the release of Hitman 3 is just so far away. If I wanted it was coming out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Blacksmith of the Sand Kingdom for Xbox One and PC, Werewolf the Apocalypse, Heart of the Forest for Switch, Stardash for Switch, Sense, a Cyberpunk Ghost Story for Switch, Press Any Button for PC, Iron Conflict for PC. The Monster Hunter Rise demo is now available for Switch. And then GTA Online players can hit the streets of Southern San Andreas with a fresh new ride, the iconic BF Weevil, while a new batch of rewards, bonuses, and discounts are also now available. New dates for you. Demonic costumes. Real quick. What's up?
Speaking of the Rise demo, I don't think I can talk about that until like a couple of hours from now. I think we'll be on stream. So probably at some point during the stream, I'll start talking about that demo. Because like, I've had it for a couple of days.
Oh, well, tune in for that. Twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. New dates for you. Demonic costumes inspired by Doom muscle their way into Fall Guys for a limited time starting January 12th. I got one deal of the day. Star Wars Battlefront 2 Celebration Edition will be available for free next week on the Epic Games Store. That's January 14th through January 21st. Now it's time for Reader Mail. Of course, you can write in patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Get your question read on the show, just like Joshy G did. Joshy G writes in and says, hey, kind of funny. So last year, I pre-ordered Cyberpunk 2077. Oh, God, the question disappeared as I was reading
it. I'm so sorry. I pressed the wrong button. A lot of things are happening over here. It should be back.
It's all good. No, it's back. It's back. So last year, I pre-ordered Cyberpunk 2077 digitally with the goal to play it on my PS5. I knew it was a risk as there was a chance it could be full of bugs. I get the game, and I immediately have disappointment of how it looks compared to what was shown in trailers. I kept playing anyways and was enjoying the game for the most part, minus the bugs and crashes. I got to a point where I had a bugged mission that couldn't be completed, and I wanted to start a new character. This happened parallel with Sony offering refunds, so I decided to go that route and getting the game later. I got Persona 5 Royal instead, and now that I look back, I don't miss my time playing Cyberpunk. That all said, what have been games that have disappointed you in the past? Imran.
So real quick, before I get to answer that question, you can't refund Cyberpunk and get it later. I just want to throw that out there. On Sony's system, if you refund a game, it is banned from your account.
It'll come back, though.
What if you get a physical
copy? Right? Like, when they put it up for sale, they got to let people buy it again.
That has not been their policy so far. Maybe they make an exception for Cyberpunk. You can buy it like a disc copy, and I think that would work.
Because also, like, I feel like they got to also put that in the fine print. Because, like, that's something that I didn't know. And Wait, there's no way that's true.
That's been true for refunds so far.
Because that would mean I can't refund Onrush. Or I can't buy Onrush. Because I refunded Onrush when I bought it.
Hold on, I'm checking this. Okay, go for it.
There is no way.
That is their refund policy so far, is if you refund a game through, like, their customer service, then you have that license. Like, you can't restore that license to your account.
If I cannot rebuy Onrush, I'm gonna.
Yeah, that came up with No Man's Sky because people like refunded the game and then once it got better, they wanted it back and they couldn't.
Holy shit! Oh wait, was Onrush was that a PS Plus game at a certain point? I think that one might have gotten weird.
Possibly.
Mine. Yeah. Okay. No. So I think I do have Onrush because of PS Plus. Huh. I've never heard of that, but that's fascinating. But you people in chat are saying that. They have to make that exception for Cyberpunk, though.
That would be my guess, is if they do it, an exception, it will be for Cyberpunk because of just how weird that is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that game still be listed. Do.
When do you think it comes back, Kevin?
Hey, Tim Geddes.
Hey, it's Tim Geddes.
I'm going to do the post show with Imran, so I'm just prepping here. You guys are having a riveting conversation about refunds and stuff. Heard you guys were talking some shit. I don't know what you said. But people are tweeting at me being like, hey, y'all need to calm your boys down. They're talking shit about 3D Mario. And I was like,
Barrett Courtney is on a rampage. I don't know what he did when he woke up this morning, surprised. But he woke up with an energy.
Yeah, we were defending 3D Mario against Good. Barrett Courtney.
Good. I heard my name.
He's back. Oh, no, he's back.
Oh, no.
It's like Beetlejuice.
Someone's got to stop Barrett Courtney.
He must
be stopped. I'm just saying, gotta be stopped.
2D Mario games designed overall. Just better than 3D Mario games.
And that's an acceptable statement. Again, like,
and Mario 64, great when it came out. Great when it came out.
That's not what you were saying. You're saying that, like, none of the 3D Mario games are as good as Super Mario Brothers U. And that's where you have a problem.
Your exact statement was the only great 3D Mario is Mario Odyssey, which is, I think, insane.
I think in today's standards, I think that's a true statement. I think Mario 64 was great when it came out. I don't think that game ages well.
Tim is stunned into silence.
There's certain things when it comes to Barrett's takes that I'm just like, some I'm going to argue. Some I am going to make fun of him for and like have fun with. There are some that I'm like, I just can't. I don't even know what direction.
He doesn't even know what to do with it, you know?
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to respond.
You know what? You know what? Some people are just broken. You know, maybe I'm broken.
I mean, it's not an unknown thing that I am a broken person, guys.
That is true.
Oh, and Ron, when do you think we get Cyberpunk back on the PlayStation Store?
Oh God.
You think that's with the hot patches that they're throwing out there?
I assume by late January, because that was what PlayStation was telling people was like, yeah, by late January there will be a patch, and like that'll probably be that should theoretically be the one that they bring back to the store at least, and then and they're like no questions asked refund policy. But who knows, it is a unprecedented situation.
To Joshy G's question of which games have disappointed me in the past, Mirror's Edge Catalyst is like the one I'll pull up, of like a game that I was anticipating so hard. I was so excited for Mirror's Edge Catalyst because I love Mirror's Edge so much, and I played it, beat it, and was like, wow, what a disappointment. It's one of those ones where, you know, when you play a game that like isn't a 10, it's not a 9, it's not an 8, right? Like it's like a 6, but you play it anyway, and because it's a thing that you kind of enjoy, right? Yeah. Like you know,
like
that
Mario 64.
Oh, how
I'm just saying shit to make you mad now.
Look at that for me.
Kevin is asleep at the button. Like, why is he not removing Bear from this call right now?
Yeah, Kevin, you gotta do your thing, Kevin. You're asleep at the wheel. You gotta take him out.
I don't know for a fact if he can remove me. I don't think he can, because I'm like a super mod and he's just a lame mod.
No, I can disconnect you.
Oh God!
I just wanted to get him that talking was amazing. A little bit. Ah, damn it!
He's running the show.
Oh, that screwed everything up.
Oh, no. Oh, they can hear me, right, Kevin?
Yeah. They can see part of you, too.
Now it's time to squad up. Of course, you can go to patreon.com. It's kind of funny games. Right in with your squad up request, and we partner you up with the best friends. Just like Ben did. Ben wrote in and says, hi, KFG crew. There's a KFBF Community Cake Bash Championship stream on Saturday, the 13th of February, Pacific Standard Time. We have 5 spots available for some kind of funny best friends to play. No experience is needed, just a PS4 console, headset, and a copy of the game, Cake Bash. It's going to be an absolute blast, and we'll also have giveaways during the stream. Cake Bash is a fantastic online/local party game about very aggressive baked goods. If there are any KFBFs that would like to participate, please send me a message/whisper at twitch.tv/pleasebeexcited or DM on Twitter @pleasebeexcited. Love the show. Keep crushing it, Ben. Of course, Please Be Excited is spelled on Twitter with, I'll just spell it out because it's spelled weird, PLEASE, so please BE, and then XCITED. Please be excited. Missing an E in the middle there. That's what will trip you up. Please be excited.
Wait, but shouldn't we push in his PSN, Bruce PSX?
I guess we can add him on PSN also. He like wrote in with his other stuff in the actual text, but yeah, you can add him on PSN.
I just
also
copy and
Bruce
paste.
PSX.
Do you want me to put Please Be Excited in there?
Yeah, put Please Be Excited in there. That'd be great. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. We write in a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Let's see here. We covered that. Not sure what that's about. Okay, here we go. Nail Bologist says Hitman 3 VR is only available on PSVR.
Okay, that kind of sucks. Because like we talked about, that PS5, PS4 thing is weird.
Big Bad Beluga says Tomb Raider Anniversary was released in 2007 by Crystal Dynamics. This canceled version was by original creators Core Design.
Wait, Hitman VR only uses the gamepad? Is what Like a Brick says. If that's true, that sucks. Like, I don't like that.
If you do the thing where you tap somebody on the shoulder and then punch them with the other hand, you have to be able to use the wands for that. That can't be like a gamepad thing.
Unless they're just button like context sensitive buttons. I would need to check, like, make sure of that. But if that's true, that's not how I want to play Hitman VR.
Tomorrow's host for the Kinda Funny Games Daily episode to wrap up the week will be Greg and Janet Garcia, who is our Kinda Funny spotlight for this week. If you're watching this live on Twitch, after this is the first impressions of Super Meat Boy Forever. And following that will be me playing some Sekiro with Snowback Mike. So get hyped for that. Of course, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindafunnygames featuring Tim motherfucking Geddes. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.